From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour is made on the big screen in a film you can still see for another week at the Little Theater. It's called The Big Sick. It's fiction, but it's based on the real-life relationship of the writers, Pakistani-American comedian Kumail Nanjiani and his American wife, who is a white non-Muslim woman named Emily Gordon. Now, Nanjiani dated Gordon, but struggled because his Pakistani family was adamant that he marry a Muslim, preferably a Pakistani. And in the film, Nanjiani stars alongside a female actor who also plays a woman named Emily. They date in the film until she realizes that Kumail is too afraid to tell his family that he's dating a white American woman. Shortly after breaking it off, she falls into a medically induced coma. And the film explores the complexity facing families, in particular, Muslims who want to date outside of their religion. This hour, we'll discuss those ideas, what we can learn from the film, and whether its lessons apply to realistic life. My guests include Ilhan Ali, who is an intersectional feminist, an activist, and a stand-up comedian. Ilhan, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me, Evan.
Sarir Fazli is the president of the Islamic Center of Rochester. Sarir, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having us again.
And Doug Kester is a teacher, an actor, a traveler. Been a lot more continents than I have. Nice to have you as well.
Thank you very much.
And in a moment, we'll be joined by Iman Abid, who is a 25-year-old Muslim American who wants to share her experiences on the subject. Ilhan, I'll start with you. You've seen the film, and the film, you know, I think it attempts to take a look at the challenge faced when there is a strong culture, a strong family desire on who someone ends up with. We don't have to be Muslim to understand that occasionally that happens in all families. But for your first thoughts on the film itself, The Big Sick.
My first thoughts when I saw the film was I liked that it brought the comedian's side of his opinions of it, because a comedian career isn't something that his mother wanted for him, and he struggles with her wanting him to marry somebody. Of all the women that she brings in for him to marry, he ends up picking Emily Gordon. And it's just like the struggles that he faced kind of hit home for me, because I didn't want to marry a Somali man, and I didn't want to marry anyone that was in our community, and that's just something that really hit home.
So you can relate to the pressure there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, let's listen. I think we've got a couple of clips to share with you. One of them is in the scene 58717 there, Rob. This is a scene where Kumail's mother invites a Pakistani woman to dinner at the house with the goal of setting her up with her son. In fact, this is one of the many women that her family tries to set Kumail up with. Let's listen.
I don't know.
My mother used to make best kulfi. You
oh, yeah?
Your grandmother?
I think ice cream is better than kulfi.
No. What?
Oh, I wonder who that could be.
Yeah.
Let me check. I don't know.
I'm guessing it's a young single Pakistani woman who just happened to be driving by our house, which is in a cul-de-sac.
Wow.
And I'm also guessing that the phrase dropped in will be said in the next 10 seconds.
10, 10 9,
8, 7.
What?
Everyone, this is Zubeda. She just dropped in.
Salam.
Wa alaikum salam.
Come, please sit.
Hmm. Oh, here, Kumail. For your files. Thanks. Your X-Files. Because
thank you.
That's your favorite show, huh?
Thank you so much.
The truth is out there.
It's from the show.
See, we all can relate to those awkward moments, but that family, you know, Kumail's family in the film is doing their best to what they think is right. They want to set him up that way. And Ilhan, you know, let me just ask you, you know, from that family perspective, what are the conversations like? Do you have conversation with family and say, look, we need to have a broader perspective here? You know, for you, what is that experience like?
I think it's wanting to preserve the culture, bringing you to America and giving you the opportunity and education that they didn't have. So it comes from a place of love. And just what's best for you. But especially when we come here and we want to assimilate and we want to go to school dances, we want to date that guy that we have a crush on that's a little bit different than us, but you have to choose between upsetting your family and making yourself happy. So even though there is pressure, sometimes you just have to bridge off and make yourself happy. And at the end, they'll probably be happy for me regardless.
Yeah, I think it's important to point out here, and Sarir Fazli will probably remind us of this, that Kumail's story is just one story, and not every family has that same kind of pressure. But you know, how much do you relate to the idea of that pressure of a desire to say, "Hey, we want you to meet someone who's the kind of person that we think you should be with," Sarir?
You know, it's the pressure is not so much tremendous from a physical standpoint, but the fact of the matter is that I think every immigrant family, whether they're Muslim, non-Muslim, what have you, the concern is always we don't want to lose our identity. And it's not a shot at the quote-unquote American identity, but the loss of certain things, whether it's religion or mother tongue or certain cultural practices, it's a concern for immigrants, especially the first generation, especially the people who have left their home and are coming here and seeing everything that they may have been taught ignorantly was wrong, but here they are. It's very important for people to understand that this is not a uniquely Muslim experience.
Sure.
Because you see it in every immigrant tradition here, Italian, Catholic, you name it. We have everything here that shows us that it takes time for us to get into the mix, so to speak, and get to know each other. And it's a little harder for our parents. And I think as our generations, you know, grow and continue, it'll get easier. You're seeing it every day. But the concern that any parent has for their child obviously starts and ends with what's best for that child, as Ilan said. And the focus is always, whether maternal or paternal, is there. And how we ultimately act on that, well, it's a long bridge that we cross.
Ilhan used the term assimilate. And Sarira, this is where I think it's important, as you say, to point out this is not just about Muslim families. This is about immigrant families and sometimes the pressure. You know, a conservative columnist recently wrote a piece, and I don't remember offhand who it was, but said, we can't call it a melting pot if you're not willing to melt a little. And at the same time, imagine being a family that feels like you could lose your own heritage, your own identity, your own culture. There's a moment in the film where Kamel is saying to his parents, you know, why would you move to America if you don't want me to be an American? If you don't want me to live, you want me to live like a Pakistani. And there's that push-pull between, can we melt into a melting pot while still retaining our identity?
Well, there's no single unique definition of American. And I think it's very important for people to understand that. Dating for a large number of immigrants is a totally foreign concept, because it just doesn't happen in their countries, or if it does, it happens in a very limited or restricted or very hush-hush manner. To engage in anything that could be considered dating in the way we define that word today, openly or advertising or whatever, is seen as a shock and a shame to many families. I'm a season ticket holder for a sports team. I engage in sports activities. I may go to plays or movies or whatever. I may volunteer at different places. That makes me an American, and nobody can tell me that volunteering or donating blood or whatever is not evidence of so-called assimilation. But every culture and every, even more importantly, I think, religion has certain teachings, and those teachings don't change either on the country we come from or the country that we immigrate to. So the idea that there is a difference in being an American when our social behavior conflicts with our religious teachings or cultural teachings, that's where we have the problem in using that word assimilation and how far we can go with it.
Let me ask Iman Abed to share some of her thoughts on this. And Iman is a 25-year-old Muslim American who, first of all, have you seen the film yet, The Big Sick?
Yes.
Okay. Yep. Get on that microphone like you've never been in the studio before. How much did the film feel like your real life experience? Why don't you tell us about your thoughts about the film and then as it relates to your own story?
I thought it was funny. I'm glad that there's attention being brought to it. I think though, if you have never experienced it yourself, you'll just think of it as being sarcastic and this like little sense of humor. But what I think a lot of people don't understand, especially like Ilhan and my generation, is that like we're going through this redefining of what it actually means to be a Muslim in America. And what does that mean to us? And so trying to define that while also seeing Hollywood take it on, you know, I've seen many criticisms of it already, you know, saying that, well, okay, yes, a brown girl comes in and she wants to get married to you. Why is that so bad? And I understand that too. It's not. It's just a matter of being able to provide people the opportunity to kind of choose instead of like this old concept of feeling like, you know, a woman comes in and this is a woman that you have to choose, especially in that skit you just shared with us. I think it's challenging because like I understand, and again, I know this was already stressed, is that this is the significance of family and the identity and making sure that you're holding on to that. I think it's also understanding, can you bring in, for instance, in the Big Sick, you see a relationship between someone who doesn't idealize that sort of way of life and sees it a much different way. So how can we as individuals, not necessarily just as, you know, as part of this larger community, define that ourselves?
When it comes to, you know, your own experience, how much do you have to weigh? See, Kamal in the film is really falling for Emily, and she's clearly falling for him. But she asks him directly, do you see a future for us? And he says, I don't know. Because he can't, and he says, I can't lose my family. He's worried about losing his family. And one of the things I liked about the film was, just when it becomes a little bit of kind of a caricature of a family, there's a lot of really nice little layers of realness, of real warmth, of, you know, funny, but also, and I don't want to give too much away, but I think the film does a good job not to just sort of caricature this family, but gives them real layers of complexity as they wrestle with this. But still, he's worried about losing them. Tell me from your perspective what that is like.
So, I mean, if we're thinking about in that respect, if you've ever been in love with someone who isn't of your faith, how do you feel, especially as you're trying to uphold the respect from your family? And it's a scary concept because in a way you almost have to sacrifice your own happiness perhaps over someone else's happiness, but that's not necessarily what you want to do because subconsciously you also have this incredible respect for your family and your upbringing. I mean, I think, you know, there are so many people out there who are constantly challenging themselves in that respect. And I think it's just the notion of love itself cannot be confined to a faith. But, you know, is that the way society has brought it? Sure. You know, maybe that's the way Muslims have brought it up to be. You know, this is the way it has to be. Again, just being able to not have to compromise your identity is huge. And again, it's not necessarily particular to Muslim communities. It's, I think, particular to immigrants in general, just like Saria mentioned. But again, I think, like, we're talking about something much bigger than something we understand. And again, it's this notion of love. And I think that's something that the movie touches on is, you know, you're falling in love with someone who isn't of your faith and you're thinking at the back of your mind, what about my family? What are they going to think? You know, how does this feel to them? And it's not necessarily a pleasing concept. Again, it's just because of the respect that you have for your family versus the respect you may have for an individual outside of that morale, outside of that that faith, that way of life.
Okay, Sarah.
You know, Evan, there are examples of people from different countries belonging to the same faith, okay, but having different cultural upbringings. So when those people from different countries or cultures under the same religious flag meet, oftentimes even then there are restrictions and condemnations of a relationship and forbiddance of these two getting married. Whether it's the boy meets girl, girl meets boy, the fact of the matter is that even in the same religious tradition, different cultural norms prevent or act upon this to stop it. And I've seen these things happen where either the boy turns his back to the family or the girl turns her back to her family and they marry, and then they marry under the cover of darkness. They don't advertise it. They don't tell anybody until now it's done. It's over. They're married. And then they, you know, celebrate it or announce it. It's not just the white girl, brown guy, brown girl, white guy. It's even amongst those from the same religious tradition that have these exact same experiences. And it takes a long time for families to accept and respect, or they act as if those kids don't even exist anymore. Mm.
The film is The Big Sick. You can see it through next Thursday at the Little Theater, and we're talking about some of the themes related to that. Before I turn to Doug for his perspective, I want to ask Ilhan and Iman specifically. You know, you mentioned, and Iman, you said, you know, your generation, you and Ilhan's generation, you know, are experiencing this, and for your family, sort of new questions, new ways of dealing with it. But everybody is going to approach it differently. Some will understand that my family will never be okay with this. I'm not going to even try. Some will date outside of their faith or culture and say, I hope I can convince them. Ilhan, have you had moments where you said, I'm really interested in this person, but I just cannot tell my family, or I cannot tell them yet? Or have you said, if they accept it, they accept it, and if they don't, they don't?
When I was younger, I had those moments. And I feel like the older that I got, the less moments that I had, because I started to be sure of myself. And like you we touched on earlier, the fact that like dating is a foreign thing for us to discuss in our families. Our parents aren't sitting around like some of my friends are going to talk to their parents about their first boyfriend or first girlfriend. I can't just be like, oh, I like this boy at school. Why are you at school thinking about boys? Like, I didn't bring you to America to think about boys. So going through my adolescence and kind of like struggling with puberty and peer pressure and friends and dating and figuring out who I am alone kind of helped me be more firm in who I am now and knowing what I deserve and want. So it's a little bit easier as an adult to be upfront with people who are in my family.
Okay. Emmanuel, how about you? Have you had moments where you thought, I have to hide this? Or do you think, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to do this and I'm going to be upfront with my family and we'll deal with it together?
I think I've thought more so on what do I want? Hmm. What do I want? What respect do I want? Do I want my respect from my family, from the people who believe in the faith that I do? Because I've never decided that I'm going to step away from the faith due to its traditions, due to its concept around love. No, I've never had to reevaluate my decision on that. But more so, how can I balance all of this? How can I balance if I do have feelings for someone? How can I balance all of that with upkeeping again the respect from my family? If this exists. And so, and I will say it's a constant struggle because you have to, I mean, I'm only 25. So like, I'm just constantly trying to determine what do I want? And I subconsciously also have always wanted what my family wanted. And that was to have a family of my own one day. And now more than ever, that's something that I definitely want again. But is it approaching it the same way my family may want? I'm not sure. I'm still trying to figure all of that out. And I will say it's an emotional struggle. It's an emotional road to getting there. And I don't think I'll ever determine specifically if I'll ever have like perfectly balanced it all out. I don't think I ever will. I don't think anyone ever does. But again, just making sure that I'm actually true to myself and true what it is that I want and who I love and who I've chosen to love.
Knowing you as much as I do, I know you love your family.
I absolutely love my family.
And you have a beautiful family. Unlike Kamal Nanjiani, the writer and star of the film, who goes to quote unquote pray when his family asks him to, and he spends 5 minutes just kind of reading books or checking his phone or working out, and says he's not even sure he really feels the faith. You do. You haven't stepped away from the faith at all. And I wonder if that has complicated more. For Nanjiani, he was just scared of losing his family. He loved them. And mm-hmm. clearly in the film, if the film matches the reality, he's got this beautiful family. They simply have this cultural tradition. For you, though, you know, you haven't walked away from the faith at all. Does that complicate it when you think about dating outside the faith?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Because you're determining these are the principles of my faith and how can I be true to that faith while also, again, being true to myself. And is being true to myself being true to my faith? Yada, yada, you know? And so it's just like, it's again the idea of love. It's so beyond us to sometimes understand that, as you know, you could maybe want everything that your faith is telling you to, but what if you're standing there and there's just someone that you encounter almost on a daily basis that you're falling in love with without even really truly understanding how you feel? And it's all these emotions that play into it. And sometimes you stand back and you ask yourself, oh my God, like, what am I actually doing? What is this? And so having to question your own senses and your own heart, while also, again, practicing Islam is huge, because practicing Islam is not just a matter of like praying. It's not just that. There's so many different ways of trying to be a better Muslim. And I mean, again, it's really defining it in my own terms, while also keep having the respect that I have for like the way my family has always interpreted it.
Okay. Yeah. Well, in the film, Emily is, I think at first when she finds out that Kamal is not even telling his family about her, she's hurt. She's surprised. Because she was excited to have her family meet her boyfriend. And, you know, Doug Kester is someone who's, you've traveled a lot, and you've been on sort of the Emily side of this.
Yeah, looking at it from the other side of, the other point of view.
So your relationship happened where?
It actually happened in Iran. Mm-hmm. I was teaching in Istanbul, Turkey, and took 2 months to go do a puppet show in Iran, and developed a relationship.
As one does.
Yeah. Once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. Developed a relationship with one of our interpreters. She had studied English at university and just started, wanted to practice her English a little bit more and more. One thing leads to another, and we began dating somewhat secretly at first, and then it became out in the open. Very complicated, very difficult issue, but I could definitely understand what his family, what the pressures on him from the film, mm-hmm. because of the pressures that I saw her going through during the time that we were together.
Did you ever think, you know, I don't want to put her through that? You know, is this worth it?
I really kind of left much of it up to her decision making. And it was interesting in that things became accelerated very quickly. Very early on, we started talking about marriage and things like that because that's what's expected in that culture. I think it put a little more pressure on the relationship. But I was very positive about everything that we were talking about. I was very happy.
Did you ever meet her family?
I briefly met her mother. Her mother came to rehearsals one time. And then another time we were actually in the huge train station in Tehran, about to go on a very long trip, and her mother was there, and I kind of caught her eye, she kind of caught my eye, and I think she figured out, I know she figured out what was happening. Later on, the girl I was seeing, she said to me, my mother came to me and said, I never taught you how to cook. If you marry a man from a foreign country and go live in a foreign country, how will you take care of your husband? Because I never taught you how to cook. And she said, I think my mother's figured it out. And I said, well, she's trying to start a conversation with you. She wants to talk to you about this. And she said, no, I could never, I don't know what I would say. And eventually we had to stop like talking on WhatsApp and Skype because she said, every time my family hears me speaking in English, they ask me questions and I don't know what to say. I don't know how to deal with this. And it was really, I could tell it was really, really complicated for her.
What did you think of the film?
Now, there was another connection because about a year after we broke up, her sister was diagnosed with lymphoma. And for some reason, most of the medical reports that the family got were in English. And she didn't understand a lot of the medical terminology. So she was sending me screenshots of these pages. And I was trying to, and a lot of it was very advanced medical jargon. I didn't understand it myself. But seeing Emily going through that and her family, I could only I could only imagine what her family was going through in Iran with that. And unfortunately, it really confirmed for her that she couldn't leave her family. She couldn't leave her country. It was the thing that drew them all closer together.
Yeah.
And we've spoken a little bit since then, but not much.
I want to draw a distinct line between two different ideas here, but I saw a recent survey. In fact, this came up when Paul Chappelle was on the show recently talking about the possibility of world peace. And if you missed that conversation, a really compelling conversation with a man from a very interesting background who does not believe that violence is part of the human condition and believes that that's a myth. And one of the reasons he points to that is he says, look at all the progress toward equality throughout human history. And it goes back centuries. And one of the things he brought up in the program was 50 years ago, 4% roughly of Americans believed in interracial marriage. I mean, there's like 4%. And now it's 87%. And I went, wait a second. 13% of Americans are not okay with interracial marriage? That's amazing to me that number is still that high. But his point is it's moving, you know, toward sort of something more absolute. Now, interracial marriage is different than marrying outside of your faith or cultural traditions, which again can be much more, I think, complicated. I think it's much easier to say, how can you not support interracial marriage, or at least the right to marry who you love and not be prevented that based on, you know, race, skin color, whatever it is, as opposed to saying, you know, are you going to marry outside your faith? Would you be willing to do that? I mean, I'll kind of go around the table for some thoughts here. I just thought, Iman, those two things are different. I'm amazed that it's only 87% in this country, and maybe I'm naive. I am naive. I'm naive on so many different things. But, you know, how you know, sort of fraught is that question going forward in terms of, you know, will you marry outside of your faith? And how legitimate do you think that question still is? I mean, I watched the film, and I know it was fiction, but it was based on Kamal's family, and I could understand, I mean, their emotional angst about it. Everything that Sarir talked about, it's not just faith, it's culture, it's heritage. So I could understand that reticence. Do you think we're moving in a direction, not just interracial marriage, but marriage of any background, you know, sort of no opposition? Or do you think there will always be some pushback in some cultures?
I think there'll still be pushback. I mean, just being frank, I think there will be. And again, it's just a matter of upholding your identity and upholding your ideals. And depending on how strictly are you abiding by the principles of whatever faith you've chosen. Again, and I can only speak to Islam and the way that I have interpreted it and the way my family has interpreted it. And it's always been the belief that you marry another Muslim because this is the way you build this family. That, again, you're talking about here you are early on in this relationship and you're questioning marriage at the very start of it. But what about when you start questioning a family and upbringing that family and what sort of religion you might bring into that household? And so, again, and I think it's the concept of like having someone of a much different faith or of no faith at all. What does that look like to in a household? Because, again, subconsciously, we're always thinking about the family. We're always thinking about our parents and all these different things. And so, I mean, I think we're moving in a different direction. I don't know what that direction actually is. I don't know if it means that more people will be marrying outside of their faith and whatnot. I'm not sure, but I do think there's still going to be pushback. And again, it's just a matter of the way people have interpreted the faith for ages so mm-hmm. far. And I think, if anything, it's just moving very slowly in another direction.
Okay. Sarir?
I hate to disagree, but I can't imagine there being an 87% consensus in this country in support of interracial marriage. From what I see on the streets and in the news, I think that
you don't even believe that number is that high.
I think that number is highly. I think it's inflated. Wow. If I were to go out today, based on what I see outside, I can't imagine that 87% of the people in this country would support interracial marriage. I just don't. I don't see that in the number of things that we see on the news, and I don't see it oftentimes in some of our even relationships. I mean, talk is cheap. If somebody gives me a survey to fill out, well, it's just a blind survey. Am I on the internet or it's a piece of paper? But if it comes to the point when they say where the rubber meets the road and somebody has to step up and approve or disapprove of their son or their daughter, I think the conversations that are being had in private or amongst, as Iman describes, a cultural or religious subset of people is a starkly different conversation. And, you know, the balance, the things that we weigh in the balance every day, whether it's the family or the faith, you know, those things mean different things to different people. I think I've said here before, whatever part of the world you come from, if 10 people are from 10 different countries and they share the same faith, that doesn't necessarily mean that they've been raised with the same faith-based education. And as a result, what I believe you may not, and vice versa. When you complicate that with marrying the white guy or the white girl, for want of a better term, it really becomes a ballgame. And in this country, we've seen tremendous progress, acceptance. You see it on the streets every single day with the number of people raising their voices against the issues of racism or hate or intolerance. It's getting better for, I'm going to say, us as a community. But I think that those people who are hitting the streets and speaking out, their voices have a long way to go to be heard. And even to put that practice into real practice amongst others, I think we have a ways to go.
Hmm. Ilhan, what do you think?
I do think there will always be pushback for interracial relationships, but our generation, I know me and Iman keep going back to that, I have hope will be the one that has a lot of interracial marriages and children and relationships and changes the future, because I work with kids and they're black, white, brown. They come from all faiths and ethnicities, and just seeing them communicate with each other and tell me about their crushes with each other and them talking about individual traits instead of being like, oh, I like that black girl or I like that white guy. I think that more of us are focusing on individuals and things we have in common. And even if I did marry somebody that what my family had approved of, even then, like you said earlier, there's colorism and different clans and classes. So even within your own religion and culture, there's issues. So if you love somebody, you're going to face those issues regardless of who you pick. It's just who you're willing to go to war for. And at the end of the day, if I love somebody, I don't care what color or religion they are.
Doug?
I to take another point of view, I think so much of it is regionalism. That I grew up in California, and just so many different immigrant groups and in the same schools and so many different cultures all intersecting, that it just doesn't seem that unusual a thing for me. But I think maybe in other parts of the United States, it is, because there's not that. But I think as we get more and more immigrants coming into this country and spreading around the country, I think it might be more acceptable than just on the coasts.
Yeah, or just where you would sort of expect to see a little bit more, yeah, multiculturalism. Here's an email from Hal who says, Evan, having lived in and respected differences between expatriate values and those in traditional rural African countries, and knowing how assimilation is an immigration pressure, I very much liked the cross-cultural issues raised in The Big Sick, from arranged marriage to identity issues. And I'd like to see more peaceful, empathetic, and kind cultural tension plots like this as those between, for example, Indian and Pakistani politics. The Big Sick was a venue, The Big Sick as a rom-com venue is a good plot vehicle to encourage cross-cultural understanding. And he goes on to say, my loving father was limited in his education and experience, and he said he wouldn't talk with me if I married a woman of color. He accepted me as being against the Vietnam War, as an agnostic, but not such intermarriage or interracial marriage. I was just asking him. In rural New York State, communities aren't well integrated, especially schools, so such limited life experience like my father's leads to many U.S. and CSA rebel flags flying across the country, flying in front yards on the back of pickups. Our family sought out and fought a liberal religion in which to actively raise our two children so they wouldn't experience such community intolerance. Thanks for this discussion. So Hal's just saying, he looks at his father. I think that's what Doug is saying. Hal grew up with a dad who just was not exposed to a lot of different cultures and in some ways put his foot down and said, I would not support you marrying a woman of color. Hal's saying he's trying to kind of work through that with his own family and understanding what it means now when he looks around and says, I see Confederate flags. I see a lack of, I see a fear of others. Is kind of what you're saying there, Doug?
Yeah. And I also wonder if as travel gets cheaper, as more Americans go abroad and see other cultures and even live in other cultures, that maybe that will open up to more acceptance. I wish that I hadn't waited till my 40s to start traveling the world. But I think that's another eye opener for Americans once they've been to other countries.
Mm-hmm. Ilhan, what do you make of Hal's email? Just not just the story of his father, but I think the background being that he thinks people from essentially from bubbles, from limited travel, limited experience, are more likely to exhibit some kind of bigotry, the kind that leads to flying Confederate flags.
I definitely agree. The people who think that it's their white pride or white culture to have Confederate flags and stuff obviously haven't left their little town. A lot of people defending the Southern Confederate flags obviously didn't grow up in the South where that had a lot of negative connotation with it. I've seen more Confederate flags in upstate New York than when I did living in Southern Virginia.
Isn't that so strange? I mean, seeing the story of whether it's Cuomo ordering certain monuments to be taken down or Baltimore taking it down, I'm going, these are Northern cities with Confederate statues? What's happening here? Obviously, I'm naive and ignorant about a lot of things, but I take the point that when you see Confederate flags in the North, you wonder, What's the root of that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, Sarir, and I don't know why he invoked India and Pakistan, by the way. We could talk Kashmir for another hour if you like. But but I think what he's saying is, at the very least in the film, it's a good vehicle, even in a romantic comedy, it's a vehicle to see some of the challenges of cross-cultural understanding.
You know, and I think if the movie gets the circulation and the viewership that I, as an individual, would like, it saves people a lot of misunderstanding. It's an extremely educational piece. It brings to America and Americans what the reality is. It's a real, discussion and a real education on how important culture is. The mother tongue is so important. The food that people eat, how different it is to raise a child in a foreign country versus America. Everybody wants the same for their kid, the best education, safety, security, etc. But there's a way that, everybody feels the same, but it's different. When you talk about religion, people have to understand that assimilation goes far, but it's not going to take you to the point where you walk away from, teachings that you've had, not just from the day you were born, but your ancestors and their ancestors. And it's not easy, nor is it desirable, to forget that. And you have to be grounded in with something. And how you decide as an individual what you're going to keep and what you're going to compromise that's an extremely individual decision. And you know, talking to Iman, I'm first generation, born and raised here in the U.S. How I was treated, the rope I was given by my parents, definitely was not reciprocated by other families who had first generation American born kids. I was a boy. I had certain freedoms. My female cousins, maybe not so much. And again, I know families from the same part of the world, same thing with first generation American born kids, treated them all the same, boys, girls, whatever, stuck to their values, taught certain things, expected certain things, and they got certain things. And ultimately, as I tell people, the more you have exposure, even within the Islamic Center here, we have people from all over the world. And if a, you know, and if there's, I'm going to say kids or young people, they meet and they're from different countries and they hit it off and they're of the age and the education that they could get married, there is a number of conversations that have to happen, even though you would think it would be so simple, even within Islam or any other religion, to make it happen, that mountains have to be crossed. So that respect has to be seen and understood, and not just from the cultural, but from the real liberal and gross cross aspect of that.
Okay. Iman, thoughts especially on Hal's email and his the perspective of his family, his noticing the Confederate flags, his feeling like what leads to that lack of understanding and how we can break that down.
I mean, yeah, again, people just need to get out of their comfort zones. I think that's what it absolutely just takes, is for them to understand, immerse themselves in different communities of people. And I mean, this goes for Muslim families, non-Muslim families, white, black, whatever it is that you are, doesn't matter. But just getting an opportunity to kind of step outside your comfort zone and see what it is that people are kind of living through. I think, again, the Big Sick did a great job at bringing attention to something that only immigrant families, maybe Muslim families, are experiencing. And lots of people, again, all my life have joked around about it. Everybody assumes that by the age of 21, I was going to be in an arranged marriage. That did not happen. And so, again, it's just like this misconception of attitudes towards people who practice the faith. And so, you know, having to educate people, and luckily I had some people who were very open-minded my whole life, who were very interested in seeing the way I was trying to choose to interpret the faith. You know, it goes along, I mean, whether, you know, I guess the discussion of love is very similar to like the discussion I've had my whole life around why I don't wear hijab. I mean, it's again, like, why have I decided to do this? What have I decided to give up? You know, and it's funny because like, depending on like what family members I'm speaking to, whether they're family from Palestine or family from here, especially the family in Palestine, they're asking me all the time, so have you given all your ways out to America? Have you given up on yourself? Because again, because I
they
chose...
ask you that directly?
Well, sometimes, yeah. I mean, they've joking around about it. But again, you see more and more women, and especially just younger people who have chosen to, again, redefine it. So I've seen many women, you know, of my faith, same age range, who have decided not to wear it. And so it starts to become a little more accepting. And again, I think with time, it's definitely the conception around love and the perception around love and the perception around, like, I guess, other issues as well. Yes, the differences and the easiness between, like, being raised as a first-generation male versus being a first-generation female is also a conversation we need to start having. I do want to say, too, I think we need to start changing the conversations we aren't having, like, in our own households.
As an example?
Yeah, I think, like, whether or not you're an immigrant family or not, if you were in a... I never had conversations around, like, love, sexuality, gender. None of those conversations ever came up at home. So... you know, Ilhan was talking about, like, you could never even come to your family about a feeling you had towards somebody because you were terrified. I remember, like, the first time I ever had a crush on, like, some boy who played baseball in third grade. And I was like, oh, my God. I was like, I can't do this. This is sinful. And, like, you know, here you are just admiring someone from afar. And it was just funny because, like, I remember one time I was looking through the yearbook during the summer and I was admiring the kid's picture and my mom saw me and she's like, who is he? And I was like, I'm thinking now, like, it's just so funny to me. But again, it's just out of love and protection. I really think that. And I always give people the benefit of the doubt. And so I understand that. But I also understand that, again, we just have a lot of room to grow.
I'm way late for a break. And so here's what we're going to do. We're going to get this break. We're going to come to your phone calls. And then I've got a clip from the film that I thought was the most remarkable scene in the film. And I'm going to ask our guests, has this happened to you? So you'll hear this scene that I thought was the most remarkable from the film. And we're talking about The Big Sick. You can see it for another week at the Little Theater. And our guests are discussing it from their various backgrounds and viewpoints. You just heard Iman Abid, who's a 25-year-old Muslim American. Doug Kester is here, who is a teacher, actor, and certainly a world traveler. Ilhan Ali is an intersectional feminist and activist and a stand-up comedian. Sarir Fazali, president of the Islamic Center of Rochester. Let's get that break and come right back. Coming up in our second hour, we go out to Pulteneyville for the Summer of Food. It's a conversation about the new restaurants, two of them, that are filling the space of the old Pulteneyville Grill, one of the most popular destination dining places in the Western New York area for years now. Well, the new places, what are they? What are they offering? And how important is it to the small community to make sure there's a successful establishment there? We go to Pulteneyville next hour. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Let's grab a couple phone calls. Kayla in Rochester. Go ahead, Kayla.
Hi, I'm so happy to be on the show. I just wanted to comment that despite not being an immigrant or a Muslim, I'm a Catholic, but I identify as bisexual. And the times that I've been with women have been very similar experiences to what a lot of these callers have been describing, where the family is definitely very uncomfortable, and there's this pressure that if on my own self that if I was to get married to this person, I would have to convert and leave my faith and leave my family. Or even if I was going to marry a non-Catholic man, that they would have to convert to this faith. So I just would be interested to hear your listener or your panel's view on this idea of conversion and whether that's something that's accepted in these types of experiences that they've had.
Kayla, thanks for the phone call. Ilhan, you want to start? What do you think?
Well, especially in my family with my cousin, female cousins marrying males that were not Muslim, they did convert, and there was two different ceremonies, but then the issue came up when it came on how they wanted to raise the child. So I definitely think it's a personal decision. I personally think I would be open to marrying somebody, not making them convert, but that's not a popular opinion.
Iman, is that not a popular opinion? Do you agree with Ilhan on that?
I just think, again, it's a conversation we haven't really had, and it's because maybe we don't want to. You know, we don't want to have to face mm-hmm. that situation. And again, it's because it makes us uncomfortable as a community. And it doesn't mean that we don't think it. Clearly, it's running through your mind. It's probably run through my mind, too. Like, what would I do if I was in that situation? But do I have a community of people to speak to about it? Or rather, that I'm comfortable speaking to about it? No. I mean, but that's my upbringing. That's where I have been. But I think, again, we just never have been faced with having to have that conversation yet.
So that discomfort could lessen over time.
Yeah, maybe.
A little. Sarir, thoughts on that?
You know, I've seen it in the Kashmiri American community where, and very specifically to the girls, gone on to college, professional school. They've met non-Muslim guys, and they've converted. The men have converted. Now, the distance of that conversion, the sincerity, the insincerity, God knows best what goes on with that. We don't judge. We're not supposed to judge, at least. But the pressure is significant in even taking that step of getting to the point of, do I make this jump? And if there is a conversion, will it be accepted by my family, by my community? How am I going to be seen? How will the spouse, the converting spouse, be seen? We do see it in our community almost every day. And those familial pressures are significant. Is it something that is being more and more accepted? It is. And the simple fact of the matter is that when somebody converts to Islam, it's between them and their God. And we are nobody to judge the efficiency
sincerity.
Or the sincerity behind it. So we leave it at that, and hopefully people do the same. They don't judge.
All right, let's listen to the clip from the film that I thought was the most remarkable because it was the most awkward. It had the funniest line for me, which we're giving away the funniest line of the film of The Big Sick. And I want to ask our guests if they've gone through it. And Doug and I hopefully have never done anything like this. Here's the scene. Kamal is in the hospital, and he's having lunch with a character played by Ray Romano, the father of his American girlfriend who is in a coma, a medically induced coma. So they're having lunch in the hospital. And Ray Romano plays a math teacher, pretty simple guy, nice guy. I think sitting down with Kamel, he had some questions that he wanted to ask. And let's listen. You're going to hear Ray Romano first.
So 9/11. No, I mean, I've always wanted to have a conversation about it with people.
You've never talked to people about 9/11?
No, what's your stance?
What's my stance on 9/11?
Oh, anti. It was a tragedy.
I mean, we lost 19 of our best guys.
Huh?
That was a joke, obviously. 9/11 was a terrible tragedy. And it's not funny to joke about it.
This is so awkward and so... you've never done that, Doug. I know you never have. You're a world traveler.
No, I never have. I do get asked a lot, aren't you scared? Aren't you nervous being in these countries, being in these places?
Oh, gosh.
And I try to point out...
Again, by people who've never traveled.
Right. But I said, you know, I'm any large city, 10 million or more, is going to have incidents. If you look at Europe, if you look, almost every city has had. And I've said I've been more nervous being on public transportation in California than traveling in the Middle East.
Yeah, it's just assumptions.
It's just, yeah.
Yeah, and so all right. So let's ask the rest of the panel. Iman, anything like that ever happened? What I found so remarkable about that was that I was scared at how realistic that could be. That you have maybe even well-intended white Americans saying stuff like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And honestly, it's just like people like have this expectation of you that you have to condemn everything that goes on. And it's like, clearly, I also believe in exactly what you believe in. Like your perception around 9/11 or anything else relative to that, any of the latest incidents, or like, what did you think about what Donald Trump just recently said? What do you think I thought of it? How do I feel about the Muslim ban? No, I really enjoy it. Thank God that he did it. No, it's just like all these conversations. And again, I'd rather you just speak to me just like anyone, any other friend and whatnot. If you are asking for my perception as, you know, what is my view on it as a Muslim and how does it make me feel rather than like looking for me to come out and condemn these acts, then fine. Don't have any expectations when you're asking those questions, number one. And people are probably going to think you're also, you know, some sort of, I don't want to say a racist or anything like that, but like there's just a lot that you don't understand about the community of people. And I think like it's great though, like now with everything that's going on, people are getting an opportunity to see this wide array of like what immigrants actually look like, how do Muslim families, what are Muslim families, what do they look like, and all these different things. So you get a better idea and a better glimpse. So like we were talking about traveling and stuff like that. And it's like, go to a Muslim household if you really want to see what they're talking about. They're not talking about terrorist attacks and ISIS. They're talking about everyday things. They're probably talking about football, things that I don't care about, but they're probably talking about it. And so it's
they
just
heard
like
Sarir's house.
Yeah. Yeah. And so it's just funny to me that we're looked upon very differently.
Yeah. Okay, Sarir.
The whole 9/11 thing rings hollow, and it gets right to the bone, because I remember after I heard about it, I stepped outside down here in downtown Rochester and I made a beeline for a Lebanese vendor. I was concerned about him, and it was just one of those things that snaps in you and say, oh my God, I hope that guy's okay.
Yeah.
Knowing that I live in Rochester and it's one of the greatest places, but I went up to him and said, are you okay? I made it look like I was ordering some food, which I did. And he said, today's the first day people have ever asked me where I'm from. And I said, you know, my office is yonder if you need anything. That's where the cultural, the religious thing in you sparks up, because it's an attack on your own culture, on your own religion. All of a sudden, the people that you grew up with, played with, ate with, bled with in the sports field or in the classrooms or whatever, all of a sudden they're looking at you and say, hey, what did you do? And I say, oh, wait, you know, it's not quite like that. And the response that we give and that we have to give because we feel like we're on trial is, you know, as she says, maybe a little defensive. Hey, I'm an American just like you. Why are you asking me these questions? And you step forward and finally you have some convincing to do, even of people you've lived with your whole life.
It's like Ilhan, you have to condemn this now. You know, yeah. I mean, by the way, 9/11, 16 years old, but you still condemn it, right? You know what I mean? So about 30 seconds, we're about to lose the hour. It's melted away so quickly. But some final thoughts from you, especially on that scene that we heard. Go ahead.
I do believe in teachable moments. And whenever people say ignorant things like that to me when I was younger, I would get really, really mad and be like, you're ignorant, you're dumb. And now I'm just like, why did you ask me that? Why didn't you go to Google or educate yourself? Like, why do I have to be the voice for a whole religion? I'm not asking you about serial killers and how you feel about them.
Like, you didn't say to Doug, like, so white supremacist.
So, yeah, what do you think about the Zodiac Killer?
A lot of good lessons on, you know, sort of cultural understanding and bridging some of the divides, and I really appreciate, because these have not always been easy. It's not easy to talk about. So I just want to thank all of our guests for being here. Doug, Ilhan, Sarir Fazli, Iman, it's great having all of you. Thank you so much for opening up and sharing your experiences on this.
Thank you.
And the Big Sick, showing at the Little Theater for the next week or so. Short break, more Connections next.